Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Next month marks 30 years since Robert Mapplethorpe's death. The iconic and boundary-pushing photographer died at age 42. He challenged the definitions of art, composition, and pornography. The Guggenheim Museum commemorates this anniversary with a two-part, year-long show called Implicit Tensions, Mapplethorpe Now. The first part of the exhibition is up now and runs through July 10th. The second begins on July 24th and runs through January 5th of 2020. Guggenheim Associate Curators Lauren Hinkson and Susan Thompson join me. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So much has been written about Mapplethorpe, and so much as people know the photos. They're iconic. What did you want to showcase in this exhibition that we hasn't been shown before or explored before?
So I think that one of the things that we really wanted to explore with this exhibition is, just as you mentioned, that people are aware of Mapplethorpe, through perhaps some of the controversies that came about right after his death, following some of the censorship and attempts and obscenity trials. Mm-hmm. And it's really kind of developed a sense of Mapplethorpe as a cultural icon. But what we really wanted to tease out and was to introduce audiences to Mapplethorpe as the artist, to give a really kind of full, overarching, comprehensive view of his production, which is represented in great depth within the Guggenheim's collection.
And so on view, you'll see his images of floral still lives, his S&M pictures, as you mentioned. We do have those on view. But we wanted to bring attention as well to these really incredible, rare early works that are kind of the gems of the Guggenheim's collection. And so we have a couple dozen of these uniquely framed images that he took in the early 70s, and collages, as well as an object, a sculpture, in fact, in the show. And so there are many moments throughout the exhibition, even if you know Mapplethorpe well, where you will discover something new.
It's interesting. The frames he made, if you could describe, apparently early on with the Polaroids he took, he didn't just hand them out. He handed them out in these sort of elaborate frames, and describe them for folks, if you would.
Sure. So Mapplethorpe, as people may or may not know, was not initially a photographer. He was trained as a painter and sculptor at Pratt University in the 1960s. And so when he began working in photography, he was drawing on that training as a painter and sculptor. And so he created these unique frames that are different colors. They're in interesting shapes, polygons. There's one that is a kind of beautiful purple mahogany stain that's made in three parts, and it almost looks like a film strip, and it has three images of a couple embracing one another. And so you get a sense of Mapplethorpe taking this image of these two sitters over time, and he's presenting it to us in a format that relates to that experience of staging that image. And so it's exciting for us to be able to show these works that are not well known, that are unique. He specified exactly what color they should be painted, how they should be fabricated, and in a few cases he painted them himself. There's this great work, a series of images of Candy Darling, who was a figure in the downtown kind of queer scene in the 1970s, and she was also a film star in some of Andy Warhol's films. And Mapplethorpe took four Polaroids of her and actually framed them inside the Polaroid cassettes that the Polaroid film came in. And then he hand-painted them, this kind of beautiful pastel candy-colored color. So it's his idea with creating these unique frames was to kind of costume the images, to create the image into an object, to make photography equivalent to fine art. And that's something that was not really widely received in that time. You know, photography wasn't collected yet by a lot of institutions. There were very few collectors that were looking at photography in this way. And so he was trying to elevate photography to a fine art form.
And I think we also are interested in this fact that he did not set out to become a photographer, especially because he's so strongly affiliated with the medium and its perfection and, you know, his real, you know, ease with that medium, and it's become so strongly tied to what he does. But he was introduced to it through a series of friends and mentors who educated him on the history of photography. He originally took up a Polaroid camera, in fact, when he was making these collagic works that Lauren is mentioning, and he wanted to create his own imagery that he could work into them. And then once he started playing with the camera, he saw its real potentialities and became interested and finally kind of admitted that maybe photography could be fine art.
We're talking about the Robert Mapplethorpe exhibit at the Guggenheim. It's mentioned in the show, and you mentioned as well, Lauren, that he thought, I would have been a sculptor. Had there not been cameras invented, I would be a sculptor. Of his photographs that we see, which ones really let us know that he had a sense of what sculpture is and the lines it creates and the shadows it creates? Either of you.
There are several works in the show. You really see his fascination particularly with the sculpture of classical antiquity in a lot of his formal studies of the male and female nude, just the way that he approaches the figure, his real kind of obsession with perfection and form, both in, you know, his cropping and styling of his figures and in the physical attributes of the figures that he's picturing. And so the way he lights them, he really kind of gives a sculptural cast to live flesh so that it looks as kind of solid as sculpted marble.
And he also draws on kind of art historical traditions. There's this one image in the show that is titled Jamie, the subject's name, Jamie. And it's in one of these beautiful, unique frames that's painted in kind of rainbow colors. And Jamie's arm is draped over his head, and he has this long, beautiful hair, and he's kind of looking sumptuously out at you and has this beautiful silver necklace dangling between his nude torso. And you're immediately reminded of a Michelangelo sculpture. And the thing about Mapplethorpe in the studio, and we've had the privilege to see some of those films, talk to some of the sitters who posed for him, was that Mapplethorpe was in complete control. And so when you have these moments where you're looking at images in the exhibition, you may think, oh, he caught someone, you know, looking longingly back at him or, you know, turning in just the right way. But that's actually more likely than not the case.
He was purposeful.
He was exacting and intentional and controlling in a way, in the way he wanted to present his subjects, but also his ideas and his vision. And so one can imagine, you know, the subjects that he was involved with intimately, of course, that's present. But a lot of his sitters have said that once you entered the studio, you were the only person in the world. And even if he didn't care for you out on the street, he treated his sitters with respect and really orchestrated the entire experience so that he could get that perfect image.
There's a series of the S&M photographs, and there are all sorts, all throughout the exhibit, there are warnings that this is adult content. In one of the blurbs next to some of the S&M photos, he said for him, S&M means sex and magic, not sadomasochism. Now, he's just being cheeky. He knows. When we think about him historically, it's hard to think about now people like deciding not to show these photos in galleries, which is what happened. Back at that time, I mean, how radical was it? How radical were these pictures when they came out?
They were pretty radical. You have to imagine the moment that Mapplethorpe and his subjects were living in, both in the United States and in New York City. Of course, there were, in many of the images in this time period, were kind of post-Stonewall, post-Vietnam, but were pre-culture wars. And we're looking at a time when homosexuality was still illegal in many, many states in the United States. And so one image in particular, I think that Susan and I and others who have visited the show have returned to quite a few times, is this portrait of Brian Ridley and Lyle Heater from 1979. And I think it's a really powerful image from this series of portraits of practitioners from the S&M scene in New York, because they gave their full names. They were willing to identify themselves. And it's a beautiful image of the two of them sitting in a living room, dressed in their garb, posing for the camera. It's a portrait of love. It's also a portrait of you know, their kind of latent desire and a passion for one another and how that is expressed. But it's also a very brave image because that was not a time when you would be public about that type of identity. And so I think there are many images like that in the show, that when you think about the era that these people were living in and that Robert was documenting these communities, it's very powerful.
You also learn a lot about him and his life, because they're also just beautiful portraits of Andy Warhol and Cindy Sherman. And there's a lovely one of Patti Smith, with whom he had a relationship early on. What do we learn through those pictures of Patti Smith about their relationship?
Well, Patti Smith is one of his most photographed subjects from throughout his lifetime, you know, from their early days living together at the Chelsea Hotel all the way through their lives. And I think we see that intimacy. You know, Robert took several of the images that would become the images that would grace her album covers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are a few images in our exhibition that are the iconic, well-known ones, but then also a few that I think will be surprises to people. One is a diptych that is in a specially designed frame as well, and another features stills from, or images derived from, a film shoot that they did together for one of Robert's very few forays into the medium of film.
Before I let you go, can you give us a preview of the second part?
Absolutely. Yes, so the exhibition is organized into two separate parts, and really the exhibition is meant to celebrate Mapplethorpe and Mapplethorpe within the Guggenheim's collection. And we were gifted a group of almost 200 works from the Robert Mapplethorpe Foundation in 1993. And that gift, you know, not only supplied us with this incredible cache of Mapplethorpe images, but also really catalyzed our collecting an exhibition program in photography. It was not something that the Guggenheim was active in at that time. And so it's really had this transformative impact on the museum. And so in organizing this show, we wanted to celebrate not only Mapplethorpe, as well as his legacy. And that legacy is in the field of contemporary photography, and that legacy for the museum itself and for our program. And so in the second part of the exhibition, we've highlighted several artists that are in the Guggenheim's collection that are, you know, operating and making work with an awareness of Mapplethorpe as an antecedent, and they're kind of responding to or embracing or pushing against, you know, some of the formal and social strategies that Mapplethorpe put forth in his work.
The name of the show is Implicit Tensions, Mapplethorpe Now. Lauren Hinkson and Susan Thompson, associate curators from the Guggenheim, thanks for coming to the studio, ladies.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
You've been listening to All of It on WNYC. Next hour, Matt Smith, who is starring as Robert Mapplethorpe in the forthcoming film, as well as the director. Stay with us.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.